number one and only item for today, if you'll please call it.
From the Interim Director, Department of Labor Relations and Legal Counsel, reporting and conferring on litigation before the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission by AFSCME District Council 48.
Thank you. Please. I think what we'd like to do is let's start off with giving a summary of the findings in the open session. And then as soon as we've gone over that, when we need to go into closed session, we'll do that to move on further with our strategy for moving forward. But I'd like to get as much out in the public as session as possible regarding the decision.
Thank you, Supervisor.
Committee, on May 20th, the entire commission of the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission rendered a decision relative to three prohibited practice cases that had been filed by District Council 48. Previously, the hearing examiner, William Houlihan, had rendered a decision. District Council 48 had appealed that decision, and the commission's decision, as I stated, was rendered on May 20th. It's a rather extensive decision. The commission modified certain of the findings and conclusions of the hearing examiner, and I'd like to just identify six key points in that decision, which I think are the most pertinent things for our discussion here today. The first one dealt with the concept of furloughs, and if you recall, the county board had approved certain furlough days for 2010. And what we're talking about is the collective bargaining agreement for the period of 2009 and 2010. There was a tentative agreement that had been reached by the county's chief negotiator with the union that was subsequently taken to both the personnel committee and to the finance and audit committee, and both of those committees rejected the tentative approved the tentative agreement and then submitted it to the entire county board for approval, where first it was laid over and subsequently rejected. During this period of time for 2009 and 2010, there was not a collective bargaining agreement in place, so what the parties were operating under was the 2007-08 collective bargaining agreement, which did contain a management rights provision. The commission's position is that during the period of 2009 and 10, what they call the status quo relative to any modifications in hours of work or wages, such as for layoffs, for a reduction in work week, or furloughs, had to be consistent with a previous arbitration decision by arbitrator Greco that any reduction could only occur up to 45 hours per calendar year. And what the commission basically stated was they analogized furloughs to a reduction in the work week and said you can reduce an employee's work week by 45 hours per week. Any furloughs that exceeded 45 hours in a calendar year, they stated, would have to be negotiated with the union as a mandatory subject of bargaining, and any unilateral implementation of furloughs exceeding 45 hours in a calendar year constituted a refusal to bargain in good faith over a mandatory subject of bargaining. So when that principle, what they call a dynamic status quo principle, is applied to this contract, and when the furlough days were implemented for 2010, that resulted in hours in excess of 45 per year, and the cost for the furlough days, not counting any interest on the award, is in the vicinity of $3.5 million. The second issue that was part of the decision dealt with the actual process that I described, that going through the personnel committee, then to personnel and finance and audit, and ultimately to the board. The commission held that the county had an affirmative obligation to inform the union whether any members of the personnel committee opposed the tentative agreement during the closed session that was held on September 15th of 2009. On that particular date, that was when the Personnel Committee gave authority to the negotiators to go forward and sign the tentative agreement. There was no formal vote taken in the Personnel Committee meeting. It was, the decision was made by consensus. The Commission's decision goes down an avenue that's never been explored before by the Commission in any of its decisions, creating an affirmative obligation on the Personnel Committee, i.e. the municipal employer, to advise the union if any members of the committee voted against or were not in favor of the tentative agreement. So that's a completely different avenue or new area of law that has never been explored before, and there are no decisions on that point coming out of the commission. The commission then went on to state that the Personnel Committee had a duty to support the tentative agreement, meaning all members of the Personnel Committee, even though the commission didn't know who voted how in the Personnel Committee meeting, that the Personnel Committee had to support the tentative agreement and vote in favor of its ratification at the full county board meeting. And they stated when three members voted against the tentative agreement, the county refused to bargain in good faith. Interestingly, they state that one of the members that was obligated to vote in favor of it was Supervisor Jurczyk, who was not even on the Personnel Committee at that particular point. So there's an error in fact set forth in the commission's decision. As a remedy, the commission has ruled that since they are taking the position that there is a valid tentative agreement in place because the supervisors who were on the Personnel Committee were obligated to vote for it, that at this point, if the union requests that the tentative agreement be submitted to the county executive, that the county exec then would have the matter before him to either approve or reject the tentative agreement. There's no obligation to accept it. The final aspect of the decision, or the remedy portion of the decision, is that the county is obligated to make all the bargaining unit members whole with interest for any lost compensation owing to furlough time they were required to take in excess of 45 hours per year. So in 2010, that's correct. Yeah. So those are the six primary aspects of the decision.
Okay. Supervisor Poprowski.
Thank you. I have a question, though, Mr. Vetter, that, the tentative agreement from the Personnel Committee then went to the full county board, not right to the county executive.
Supervisor Brokowski, it actually went from the closed session of the Personnel Committee to separate meetings of Finance and Audit and Personnel, where a vote was taken in open session. Then it went to the county board, where it was first laid over, and then it was subsequently voted on several weeks later.
Well, I didn't hear you say that piece. I heard you say that it went from Personnel to the county executive. So, that's all.
Okay. Supervisor Rice.
I don't know if this is proper for open or closed session, but I'd like some discussion at some point about options and
we're going to do that closed session. Right. We just want to get the I wanted to get the summary on the record in the public as far as the decision and discuss as much as we can in the open session, and then we'll discuss strategy in closed session.
Ask Mr. Vetter, in terms of the commission members who rendered this decision, who participated, and has something happened to the composition of the commission since the decision was rendered?
Supervisor Rice, yes, there were several changes that have occurred. There was a vacancy on the commission when this decision was rendered on May 20th. The two commissioners that participated were Commissioner Newman and Commissioner Bauman. The third individual that had been appointed to the commission at that point was James Scott, the new chairman. He did not participate. Since the 20th, Commissioner Baumann has resigned and been replaced by Commissioner Rodney Posh. So now we have two Walker appointees. That is a new chairman, James Scott, and Mr. Posh. And then Commissioner Newman, who was the chair previously, is still on the commission as the third member.
I wanted to go back to this section of the decision that talks about the duty of the personnel committee to support the tentative agreement and have an understanding about what the commission's logic was here. Are they establishing that by law a member of a committee, a personnel committee, is obligated to vote in favor of a tentative agreement when it comes to the full board, regardless of whether it was a split a consensus, if you will, or a split decision in the committee? And does it give any leeway for intervening facts or circumstances that may have taken place between the committee meeting and the board meeting?
With respect to your first question, the decision is unique in the sense that it states that the county did not inform the union whether or not any members of the personnel committee were opposed to the tentative agreement. That's in paragraph 23 if you have the decision in front of you. So it creates an affirmative obligation on the municipal employer that, to my knowledge, has never existed before in the state of Wisconsin. And there isn't – the transcript of the hearing does not contain any evidence as to what transpired in the closed session, you know, whether there was consensus, whether there was a vote, who voted in favor, who didn't vote in favor, and whatever. So there appears to be a leap in this conclusion to the point that because there wasn't any affirmative statement by the personnel committee that one or more of the supervisors were opposed to the tentative agreement, that automatically everyone must have been in favor of it. So that is what I read from this conclusion in the commission's order. I'm sorry, what was the second question you had, Supervisor?
Well, the question I think is answered. The second question is answered by your response to the first question. So, proceeding, if we are to follow this commission policy, then it creates an affirmative obligation on the part of the committee to communicate with the bargaining unit if there is any opposition to ratification of a tentative agreement.
That's what's stated here. The general rule in Wisconsin prior to this decision was if there were and in a lot of municipalities and counties and municipal government units, often you find elected officials at the bargaining table. You will have the personnel committee, you know, you might have a city council of 10 members, and three of those members might participate at the table. And if they're participating and a tentative agreement is reached, and they're sitting right there as part of the bargaining team, then if they subsequently would vote against the tentative agreement, that has been determined to be bargaining in bad faith. But if you're sitting there and you're opposed to it, you have to advise the other side. And that's fine. I mean, there could be three members. Two could be in favor. One could be opposed. And then that one person can vote against it when it gets to the, you know, before the county board or common council. But you have to express your opinion. But that's different because the personnel committee was not at the bargaining table. The personnel committee gives direction to the labor negotiator.
Right. So isn't the commission, in essence, assuming that the members of the personnel committee are the same as the bargaining team?
Yes, they are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
Supervisor Schmidt.
Well, I was in that area, and I had another question, but you kind of answered the question, Supervisor Rice's question, too. And we don't do bargaining. I don't. And even if a vote was taken, I don't remember any legislative body who is obligated when it comes in front of the whole body to, you know, circumstances can change, you get new information, you rethink your vote. you know, it's certainly not a way to run things, changing your votes constantly, but everybody on occasion has done that because of new information or you know, whatever. Okay, so I don't know how that stands the legal test, and you just said that with the bargaining.
Well, and I'm sorry, that was part of the second question from Supervisor Rice. I think it's a very good point, because when the issue then came before the county board at its meeting, I believe it was on October.
It got laid over a month.
After it was laid over, it was on October 14th. There was it didn't go the full month. There was a special meeting called on October 14th for the purpose of dealing with the issue. And at the agenda indicated that at the start of that meeting, the county executive presented the budget for 2010. And as part of that budget, you had Org Unit 1972. And that was all presented before the agenda item dealing with the contract. So to both of your questions, Supervisor Schmidt and Supervisor Rice, yes, circumstances had changed.
Yes, they did.
And you were apprised of new information relative to the financial situation the budget situation for 2010. What occurred in 2010 when you ended up with your surplus from 2009 was not relevant at that point. You didn't have that information. So I think there is an argument that circumstances did change, and even those supervisors that may have voted in favor, those supervisors on the personnel committee that may have voted in favor of the tentative agreement, were provided with more information that could be provided or could affect their decision.
My other question, of course, no votes were recorded or taken, too, as the point's been made. But my other question was in the WERC judgment, they said, and you said whether there was an error, they said three members, they have to vote the same way, that changed their votes. So were there three members? Jurisic, you identified none of us, to maybe save one, were on the personnel committee at that time also, but neither here nor there. But so were there three members who, quote, changed their votes?
No.
Because they made a mistake and they said Jurisic was part of the committee when she wasn't. So is that clarified? Yes. Thank you.
Supervisor Schmidt, in the personnel committee, the vote was 5-2.
Right.
With, I believe, Supervisor Borkowski and Supervisor Cesars voting against it.
Yes.
They're the two. Okay.
And then on the board floor, Supervisor Thomas changed his vote. Even though in the listing of supervisors in the decision, they mentioned that Supervisor Jurzik was one of the people who changed their vote, and she wasn't even on the committee at that time.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any other questions before we go into closed session? You okay, Mark?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I have just one question. You mentioned that basically this decision, or at least part of it, has gone down a road not traveled before. Is that specifically in dealing with binding the personnel committee to vote on the board floor to mirror what was voted at the joint meeting?
Supervisor Sanfilippo, if we could discuss that in closed session, I think I'd be more comfortable
sure.
with that, if
okay.
that's possible.
All right. If there's no other questions, then Mark.
Mr. Chairman,
Gordon, yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to make the motion that we go into closed session. Under the provisions of Wisconsin Statute Section 19.85, paren 1, paren G, for the purpose of the committee receiving oral or written advice from legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted with respect to pending or possible litigation with regard to the following matters, from our interim director, Department of Labor Relations, and legal counsel reporting and conferring on litigation before the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission, AFSCME District Council 48. At the conclusion of the closed session, the committee may reconvene in open session and take whatever actions it may deem necessary in aforesaid matters.
Thank you. We'll call the roll on the closed session motion.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Rice.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Six ayes, zero noes. The motion to go into closed session is approved.